I'm recording now the second of probably a three or four part episode series on Drop the Rock book, Removing Character Defects, Steps 6 and 7. On this episode, I'm going to finish the thoughts on Step 6 in this book. I've picked out certain passages that I found helpful to me. I think these steps are so important to me, and I hope they will become important to you, that I think a thorough discussion of them is warranted. The first thing I'm going to cover is they're talking about a series of people telling their stories to emphasize a part of what they're talking about in terms of taking the actions of step 6 and 7. And this woman says, in working through some of these issues with my sponsor and talking about them in meetings, I began to realize that the things that make me who I am are not defined by my actions. And that's true. I don't have to be the person I created with my self-centeredness. That doesn't have to be me anymore. And that's what we're talking about in step 6 and 7, changing our personality. She says, I wasn't just attending meetings anymore to avoid doing what I needed doing outside of meetings. All my defects became glaringly obvious through my actions, but that does not define me as a person. I may act badly on occasion. That doesn't make me a bad person. I started looking at giving up and releasing those parts of me, those habits of action that were defective and self-defeating. Finally, I was working on the steps outside of the meetings instead of just talking about them at meetings. I saw my character defects as glitches to be corrected rather than major portions of my framework. Sometimes it felt pretty major, but as I learned to surrender and release, how I define myself began to change too. We see ourselves as different people. I'm not the person I create when I'm in self. I don't have to be that person. I create that in my mind, and my ego creates that, but that's not something that God created. Now I seek the opportunity to look at defects and let them go. Over the years in recovery, I've slowly developed a deep belief that I can solve the problem and find the willingness to do so. And I think they left out here the belief and the willingness comes with my relationship with my higher power. Then they talk about taking action as part of step 6. And they make a good point here. For many of us, working the steps has meant going to meetings and talking about the steps and what they've meant in our lives, or working the steps so we could talk about them in meetings. Occasionally, we've been forced into taking action. Whether they say talk's cheap, but talk won't change us. It's what we do. Somebody said, don't listen to what we say, watch your feet. See what people are doing. Occasionally, we're forced into taking action, like doing a four-step inventory or taking a fifth step. Making amends calls for action. Usually, however, after taking these specific actions, we're done. Step 6 and 7 in particular become nodders. I've been to so many discussion meetings through the years, and I've heard very few people really talk about how effectively they're using 6 and 7, how they're practicing them on a daily basis. Most of the time it's, I'm willing to let go of my character defects, and I say the prayer, and if God's removed these defects today, then they were blocking me from Him. I don't think that's how these steps are meant to be or worked in any way. It says we go to meetings where 6 and 7 are discussed and nod wisely and serenely with almost every comment that is made. When it's our turn to talk, we explain about getting into the 6 and 7 after doing our inventory and taking a fifth step. We all feel like we're working the steps. But it's a challenge to take another look at that process. Talking about the steps of meeting is much different than working them. How true. Remember that chapter 6 in the big book, where these steps are outlined, is called Into Action. Having done a little work in action on a step in the past is a far cry from continuing to work it now. If I don't work 6 and 7 today, I won't change. My personality won't change. And I don't think my personality has ever permanently changed so that I don't have to do 6 and 7. Nodding at meetings in agreement with a particular profound comment is not the same as doing what the speaker may have done to reach this awareness. And we're supposed to share our experience at the meetings on how we actually working the steps and how we're working them today. We must become willing to take action, continuous action, to become who we can become. It takes awareness to become entirely ready. Slow down, stop doing, and be, feel it. And I think the awareness they're talking about is from my relationship with my Creator. Remember, it says after steps 4 and 5 that we begin to know our Creator. We begin to know our Creator in a new way. We begin to see His effectiveness in working in our lives. And that after step 4 and 5, I'm actually aware of my character defects with God's help, and I can see them as they crop up every day. If I haven't done a thorough 4th and 5th step, I won't be able to see that. I won't be aware of it. Remember, step 10 says we watch with God for our selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We're watching with God. We're aware. And that when these crop up, when I become aware of them, I ask God at once to remove them so they don't have to become manifest in my personality anymore. They say here the sixth step means facing ourselves, and that is usually more difficult than being honest with another person. I found it difficult to lie to others because of practicing the principles of the program, but still easy to lie to myself. When I say all too swiftly, of course I'm willing to change, I know I will ask myself, really, who's kidding whom? And actually, are you practicing the steps to change? The fact, this is in bold writing, the fact that I will daily question my willingness to change will increase my ability to become increasingly willing. So each day, I meditate in the morning on page 83. God, show me the way of love, patience, tolerance, and kindness. The way of it, so I can be aware of it, so I can be aware of how to practice it. He talks about this guy that his sponsor said, you played football in school, didn't you? He asked, knowing full well I had, reminded me that it told him I hated practice, getting those bumps and bruises for no good reason. He also reminded me how I said I love the actual game, especially the cheers when I did something very well. He said, you know, no one gets excited about practice. It has no flash to it. It's the game that counts, but a good game performance requires hard practice. And the sixth step can be compared with football practice. If you're going to make continuous progress in the program, you really have to work the 6 and 7 steps. You can't stand around on 1 foot waiting for applause. There won't be any if you don't keep practicing. And Joe and Charlie said, we practice our character defects, and that shaped our personality. And now we're going to have to practice the opposite of those character defects, and we'll have a new personality and a new way of living. And compare. See which one works better for you. They give some more information here. They say, if we think that recovery is strictly about abstinence from alcohol or drugs, food, sex, gambling, and so on, then staying abstinent will solve all our problems in life. Then we probably won't want to hear what come next. Well, of course, being sober doesn't solve any of my alcoholism. It just means that I'm without the treatment for my alcoholism, and sober is when my alcoholism is manifest, my self-centeredness, my separation from God, my selfishness. And then it's manifest in my life by fear, resentment, shame, and guilt, and harmful conduct. If we feel, on the other hand, that recovery is about living fully, usefully, and freely, about reaching toward our potential, then we might keep an open ear. A person who is not in recovery mentioned observation made about folks in recovery. He felt that recovering people spent almost all their time learning to stand up and helping others stand up, but very few spent any time walking. If walking, this analogy, means getting on with a meaningful and purposeful life, there's some truth in his observation. We get so caught up in our own abstinence or going to meetings and helping others recover that we lose sight of the larger picture. And the larger picture is, am I using these steps to change? Am I using these steps to have a new relationship with my Creator? Sure, it's there. And we celebrate sobriety. We celebrate birthdays of being sober, but we don't really celebrate emotional sobriety. You can be sober for years and have no emotional sobriety, and all that means is that you're not drinking, but you really haven't changed. Helping others is a great way to move into humility, And then they're going to talk about that in step seven, which is about humility. To gain a spiritual perspective on life, helping others to stand is not as quite as meaningful as helping others learn to walk, nor is it as meaningful as helping others find a direction and destination to walk toward. We help others by setting the example rather than telling them the example. Remember, we're supposed to be an example of what the steps have done for us, and that we give guidance on the steps we took to achieve that. The first act is awareness, and second is acceptance, and the third is surrender. So if I'm aware, then I can accept, and then I can surrender the action. Once we have chosen to be willing to surrender, which is what we're talking about in step six, we won't move on to those things that can help our surrendering and our awareness of what is we're giving up. The choice is surrender. To become entirely ready is just that, a choice. Awareness, however, is an entirely different matter. To make surrender effective, we must be willing to help a process by using our awareness to move into line with the surrender. That's an important point. I have to be so aware of my willingness to let go that the willingness to let go and the awareness of it leads to the surrender. If I'm not aware and very willing to let go, I won't surrender it. We must choose to act as if. That's an important point they make in here. Our awareness must shift so that we become aware when we aren't acting in accordance with our choice. So I have to be aware when I'm back in my character defects. And I get that through my relationship with God. Each day, He makes me aware. And so when I'm aware when I'm not acting in accordance, then I can be aware that I need to be willing to let go, and then I surrender them. So you become aware, you become accept them, that you're there, and then you surrender and be willing to let go. They have a story here from a woman named Lisa talking about as if and how it relates to the sixth step. My sponsor gave me a typed piece of paper and told me to put it on my bathroom mirror and read it daily. That piece of paper said, "In the arena of human life, the honors and rewards fall to those who show their good qualities in action." So true. I did as my sponsor suggested. That sentence kept staring at me all the time has helped me with my continued readiness. The good character qualities I want to have are only demonstrated to me and others by my actions. If I'm not willing to change, and if I don't act differently, they won't see the change. Just thinking about it won't change me. But the only way for me to get there, to get what I needed, was to act as if I had it. The key word is act. I've discovered in my case that knowledge often follows action rather than vice versa. When I faked it in my early days, I find myself making it in my later days. So that's why I believe we need knowledge of the process of the steps to be able to put them into action. In the beginning, I was asked to act as if I was following instructions, trusting the program, listening to my sponsor, and coming to believe. The amazing thing was that soon I was doing those very things. I was never able to think my way into recovery. My mind created a tremendous amount of trouble for me. How true. I needed to turn my mind down, not off. I soon discovered, and I think what they're talking about there is turning away from myself, my self-centered thinking. I soon discovered the difference between doing and thinking. The key to acting as if is faith. And we learn to trust God and have faith by the actions that that are accomplished by that and the results. And the way to faith is through my fears. I've made progress and stay entirely ready when I turn fears over to faith and simply act as if. Then they have a discussion about it. As we discussed, acting as if can seem to be in conflict with being genuine and authentic. However, when we're willing to make choices to make positive progress and have God shape us toward our potential spiritual being, then acting in accordance with those intentions is genuine. And so that's so true. When I'm willing to make positive progress and to have God change me, then acting in accordance with those intentions will become natural. They go on, they're telling a story from an observation from another person, and I'm going to read part of her observations. I think it's very good. This lady says, fortunately, just about that time, our group was slated for discussion of step six. I opened my copy of the 12 and 12 and read the step all the way through. Although I'd read it many times before, it seemed as if I saw its meaning for the first time. I gathered that instead of fighting mightily against a defect, I also had to let go of it. Just simply open my hands, my heart, my mind, and say to my higher power, here it is, this defect, I give it to you. Please remove it from me. And so often I would say, well, I'm going to change. I'm going to be less self-centered today. I'm going to be more honest, more fearful. But I never had the power of my own to accomplish that. And it's when I have my actions aligned with God's power that I can achieve it and my motives. So by simply letting go with God's being with my higher power, he'll remove it. But if I hold on to it, it won't go away. Remember, God will not do for me what I could do for myself. And I can let go, and I can try to practice the opposite of the character defects. They go in to say, I have to keep in mind that if I'm not 100% sincere in my willingness to be rid of the problem, the procedure won't work. Yeah, I can't be 90% willing and have 10% holding back. It's not going to go away. It has to be 100%. It's like the first step. I have to be completely willing to let go of these character defects when they crop up. I have come to realize that step six means exactly what it says. She goes on to say, no more, no less. When and if I become ready to have painful, inhibiting, or longstanding flaws removed, they will be. It's so true. Once I'm willing to let go, then they'll be gone with God's help. And if I'm not, they're not going anywhere. It says, as for all those bad habits I once listed as defects, I'm trying to rest them one day at a time as I do my addiction with God's help. And there's a final part to this story. A long time ago, a very wise person wrote, a person's life is what his thoughts make it. Remember, all action is born in thought. And remember, my disease centers in my mind. So I have to change the way I see things and think, and then my actions will reflect that. And when I become willing to let go of my character defects and practice a new way, when I'm willing to let go, God will remove it, and then I'll be able to practice the new way. I may never comprehend, but I know its value to me of my thoughts. My person's life is what his thoughts make it. It calls forth the most precious asset any recovering person can have, the willingness to get out of the driver's seat, to stop trying to run the show. I need to keep the 6 and 7 step message of letting go and letting God in my thoughts at all time. It's so true. Willingness drives us. Willingness drives the first step. Am I willing to change? Once I realize I'm powerless over alcohol and I'm powerless to manage my life, if I truly accept that and look at the consequences of the way I've been living, I'm willing to change. And until you can really take a thorough first step and be completely honest with yourself about the hopelessness and futility of your condition, you're not going to be willing to change. I see a lot of people I work with. They can see that they can't stop drinking, and they can realize that their life is a mess, but they haven't fully conceded in themselves this, and they can't be completely defeated so that they will be willing to change. They're still holding back, and that's why they won't do the rest of the steps. And I cannot make somebody completely willing. In this book, they give quite a few pages looking at the 7 deadly sins and how those character defects are manifest in people's lives and how they're willing to change. I'm not going to go into that area. It's in the 12 and 12, and it's in step 6 and 7, how our character defects are triggered by fear and how some essays and thoughts on how these are manifest in our lives and why we're willing to change. They say they're finishing up when step six. Can you see why it says in the 12 and 12, this is a step that separates the men and women, the winners, from the boys and girls, the losers? It's the pinnacle of the program. They go on to say, it is gut check time. Are we ready to change our way of living or not? Remember, if we don't change our way of living, our sobriety date will change. If we don't change our personality and the way our life is being lived, then why, what's the point of it all? And so it says, it's either fish or cut bait. It's not a maybe proposition. It says, let's fill that big self-centered hole in our being with spiritual usefulness. Isn't that what we're talking about? The whole program is to get out, destroy our self-centeredness. Remember, Bill W. said, it's easy, simple but not easy. It means the destruction of my self-centeredness, and my self-centeredness cannot be more effectively destroyed than by practicing steps 6 and 7 every moment of my life. It says this step requires commitment and specific action. There's no better time to get to it than right now. As we're caught in the 12 steps, they go on to say the chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear, mainly fear that we would lose something we already possessed or that we would fail to get something we demanded. How true. All my resentments were triggered by fear. My whole life was fear. I was the water I swam in. I didn't even realize it. I had a new person I started to work with. He's young. He just came to a few meetings. We were talking. I said, well, do you have fear? He says, no, I don't have any fear. And of course, he does, but he doesn't even recognize it because he's been swimming in it his whole life. Living on the basis of unsatisfied demands. Remember my demands, when I decide what I need to fulfill my instincts of life, they're never satisfied. The ego is never satisfied. I can never arrange life and satisfy all my demands so I'll feel okay. It's never enough. Changing the outside world, changing what I think I need and getting that, it's never going to work. I was under the delusion, remember it says, that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if I managed well. Wow, that was my whole life. I deluded myself that I could, if I could just manage and accomplish things and then I would be okay. Well, there were periods where I was okay, but it was very short-lived. It was never enough. Now I have to wrest satisfaction, happiness out of being service to God and others through my relationship with God and working the steps and unblocking His power in my life. It says, living on a basis of unsatisfied demands, we obviously were in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. That's one way of putting it. Remember, we are fighting everybody and everything. Therefore, we are taught there will be no peace unless we're able to reduce these demands. So I have to get my demands on what I need to the level that God wants them for me. And I can't be the one that decides what I'm going to need in my areas of life. I have to go to God and let Him direct me on what I need. And those paragraphs on fear on page 67, 68, and I've written several thoughts on them, I think that really gives us guidance on how to do that. They go on to say here, we hear in the program that fear equals frustration, ego, anxiety, and resentment. It says we don't want to return to the life we led before recovery, but fear should never be the reason why we don't. Yeah, fear can keep us from doing things that we need to do. Some people are probably have fear of working the steps, and that fear leads them not to change. Fear keeps us from being open to the program and from being entirely ready. It says if we're only in recovery because we're afraid of returning to our old way of life, we'll never pay attention and open our hearts to learn about the new. We'll be too busy looking back over our shoulders to make sure the old life isn't creeping up on us. Yeah, we have to be done with trying to look back and just not return to that. We want to move forward to change. We want to become a new person. We want a new attitude, a new way of life. I don't want to react the way I used to before I worked the steps. And even today, I'll react sometime and I'll recognize it right away and say, gee, I don't want to do that. I don't have to do that anymore. I ask God to change the way I see things so I can react differently. Hopefully, I'll pause when agitated, doubtful, like it says on page 87. And before I react, I'll ask God to direct my thinking. It says we have to want the program out of a desire for a new life, not out of fear for the old. Positive thinking and behavior will be in charge if we are to make any character growth. Absolutely. Every fear encourages negative thinking that can destroy us. Fear separates me from God. I can't have fear and courage at the same time. I can't have fear in God's direction at the same time. When I'm in fear, I'm directing the show. At least that's been true for me. Guilt and shame come from the past just like fear. If those feelings are what drive us, we will never grow. The 6 and 7 steps let us examine our fears. We make an inventory of each fear until we understand what causes this. Then we'll be able to find a way to work through it. Whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, and there's always fear related to being disturbed. And what these basic fears, and I've talked about them before, and then they trigger a character defect. How do we reduce our fears? How do we move into graceful living and grow toward spiritual expression? And this is what they're saying. They say the answers lie in our ability to become humble and trust through the 7th step. And so we're going to become humble and we're going to learn to trust God in the 7th step because we're going to be humble enough to be willing to let go and then to seek God's power. And then we have trust when we see how he changes us. Whenever I stop myself from reacting based upon one of my character defects, when I'm judging or become irritated at something, and I stop and I say, God, I don't want to be this way. I want to be considerate, loving, and tolerant. And then I change immediately the way I see things. Then I learn to trust the process and trust God in the process of being humble, willing, seeking the power, and practicing the opposite. To me, that's steps 6 and 7. Then they end this with a story by Joe McHugh, who wrote The Steps We Took and Carried the Message, which you know if you've been listening to podcasts, are very helpful. Joe was the original Joe of Joe and Charlie. He made the big book come alive. It wasn't until I listened to him and Joe and Charlie that I had any understanding of the power of the big book and the power of the steps. Joe McHugh on Stripping Away. He says, I have a pretty rocking chair down in my office. When I first bought the building, someone had run off and left the chair behind. There wasn't anything else there of any value, but there was this old rocking chair. It was just a horrible-looking mess, painted black with one of the rungs broken out of the back of it. I decided I'd keep it, thinking maybe one of these days I might put it together. Quite a few years went by, and it just sat in the attic. Several times, some of the guys tempted me to throw it away. In fact, I'd find it around by the dumpster and I'd bring it back, saying I was going to look at it one of these days. I finally got this old rocking chair out of the attic and into the light downstairs so I could really see it. And as I began to look at it, I saw that it was really a fine chair. I got some paint stripper and I began to strip it. I stripped all the paint away and found that it was solid oak. I took the old raggedy bottom that had been covered over many, many times with different cloth and tacks, and I tore it off and threw it away. There was one broken rung, and I made an identical one by bending one and putting it in there. I sanded and refinished this chair. Finally, I took it to the upholstery shop. I asked the man there how much it would cost to put a nice white velvet bottom in it. He looked at it and said, I'll be glad to put it in there, but before I fix it, I'll offer you $350 for that chair. That beautiful, valued chair was always there. It was there all the time. It was simply covered up. The chair has always been beautiful since the day the furniture maker made it, and that's the way I am and you are with God's life inside of us. God made us this way, beautiful and valuable. Like the rocking chair, for a period of years, I covered myself up with all sorts of things and made a big mess. The steps of this program have enabled me to uncover, discover, and discard. That was a major theme of of Chuck C. What do I have to uncover, discover, and discard that isn't the real me? It's a program of getting rid of things to get down to what we want. It's not a program of getting anything. And the more I get rid of, the more I actually get. And it's the things that I become the person God created, not the person Michael created. And he says it's a program of getting rid of things, uncovering, discovering, and discarding. How true, how powerful. I'm reminded of the story about Michelangelo and the David. And they said, well, how did you create David? And it's, if you've ever seen it, it's a huge, he's about 25 feet tall. It must have been an enormous piece of marble that he was used to create this. And they said, what did you do? He said, I chipped away all that wasn't David, and then it was there. I think that's what we try to do with steps 6 and 7. And the steps is to let go of all of me that isn't the real David. And as I let go of it, God will bring the new David out. Sandy Beach gave a talk at Akron on Founders Day several years ago. And he said, the greatest gift he gets is to see the real me. He says, as you work the steps, we're all covered up with all sorts of stuff we've accumulated through the years. And as we let go and work the steps, we remove all of that, and he's left with the real me. And that's such a gift. And the real me is the one God created, not the one I created. And 6 and 7 is where I make the choice every moment. And I'm going to be the person Michael created or the person God created. Am I going to work 6 and 7 right at this moment so that I can change and I don't have to practice a life based on the character defects, but practice a life based upon God's character that's within me. So I hope this was helpful. I don't really have notes or plan these things. I just ask God before I begin any of my meetings or these studies to direct my thinking, divorce it from selfishness out of self-seeking motives, help me see God's truth in what we're studying so I can give, I'm able to carry God's message. And that's really all we're trying to do in AA, be of service to God and others and to carry this message to others. So I hope this is helpful. Let me know if it is mhurwitz, H-U-R-W-I-T-Z, 50@gmail.com. I'd like to hear from people if they find it helpful. I certainly, just from completing this and doing this, sitting in my chair, I've gotten a lot out of it myself. So I want everybody have a great day. And I'll do the step 7 on Drop the Rock in the next couple days. Thank you for your attention and time.